Succession number 23195, Reel 2.
Mr. Moulton, Reel 2. Now, we were talking about your call-up, which was in November 1942.
Right.
So you'd had the medical a bit prior.
A little bit before, yes.
Was there any question of as to which unit, whether Army, Navy or Air Force?
Yes, indeed. I was invited to state my preference for a service and a unit. And I'm now slightly ashamed to say that what I put down, which is really quite absurd, was the Royal Pay Corps. It's rather cowardly, I think. As far away from the infantry as I could get. Anyway, that's what I put. So.
Well, why did you choose that one? Was it just because you got experience as a pay clerk?
Well, mainly, I think, I hope. But also I thought it might be a fairly safe job. Not too likely to be blown up as a pay clerk, I thought.
And that was rejected?
Yes, what happened was that either at the same time as a medical or separately, I cannot now remember, but I attended to take a series of tests. I attended a centre. I was given various little puzzles to work out and little collections of spare parts to put together to see if I had any aptitude with my hands, etc., etc. I remember one, for example, was a sort of simple door lock supplied in pieces, and I had to put it together. A bicycle pump was another one, again supplied in bits. And I had great trouble in putting the bicycle pump together, despite its apparent simplicity, because I'm not that sort of person. And so I don't think I did very well on these various aptitude tests, but there was another test, separately, whereby one put on a pair of earphones, and Morse symbols were played from a record through the earphones, in twos, in pairs, and on a sheet of paper in front of you, numbered, as each pair of Morse symbols came up, one had to either tick if they were both the same, if one felt they were both the same, or put a cross if you thought they were two different symbols. I got on famously with this one. I rather enjoyed it. I got into the swim event. There's quite a lot of them. I went down page after page, I suppose. And I felt sure I'd done well there. Of course, nobody ever told me that, but I'm sure I did. I found it easy.
So what happened? So you'd done the test. Did anyone say, no one say anything at the time? But
no, I think I got an interview. I was invited to chat a bit about my feelings, but I can't remember more than what happened there or what I said, because the upshot of it was I finally got posted to the Royal Signals, and I've always thought since that it was due to my outstanding performance on this very simple Morse test. I don't know, of course.
This would be like in November.
That was.
And where were you called up to go to join the Royal?
To Richmond in Yorkshire, to the barracks of the Green Howards.
And as barracks have a name, or were they just Richmond Barracks?
Just Richmond Barracks.
And what part of the Royal Signals? Did the unit have a name, the training unit have a name?
Well, at that time, I was not yet in the Signals. I couldn't even have known I was due to go to the Signals. Whether that was decided then or later, I have no idea. But the idea of being in Richmond with the Green Howards was to do 6 weeks. Primary military training.
So this was an infantry training centre.
That's
do you know
infantry
the number it had? They had a number.
Oh, I see. No. They had rather old-fashioned Victorian-style barracks in which I started my army life.
Let's. What about your actual reception? When you got there, how did they sort of take you in? You arrived at the gate, so to speak, a civilian, and then
we were picked up at the station. I come up by train from London. That was the last time on my own steam. I got out on the platform at Richmond. There were obviously other people in the same boat. In fact, I'd already talked to one or two. And then on the station were various NCOs who proceeded to bawl at us and got us into some sort of order and marched us out of the station. And laid us into three-ton lorries. And we were then driven a fairly short distance to the barracks. At the barracks, we were unloaded and put into a large room. Now, I'm stretching my memory to the limit here. I do remember, probably right away, being provided with a uniform. Went around a large room, long, long trestle tables loaded with battle dresses and their various components, things like shaving gear and all the bits and pieces a soldier would require, hat, cap or whatever. At that time we were wearing the fore and aft forage caps, which of course we found extremely difficult to keep on our heads when we first got them. Well, we thought they were rather ridiculous. So we went along along these tables from one man to another, giving us, handing us out things. So someone gave me two shirts, and somebody else two vests, and somebody else two pants. I think it was some rudimentary effort at sizing you up, but it was rather hit or miss, I'm sure. So right along the table, around the corner, back down the other side, and we finished up with a big pile of clothes. I think the last thing given us would have been the kit bag in which we dumped them. Don't think at that stage we got equipment. That must have followed later. So I think we got all our clothing. And then we must have been wheeled off. Let's think. I don't know whether... I'm not quite sure how many recruits there were on this occasion, whether we were just one bunch or whether we were split into several groups. But we finally landed up in a bed space in the...
Can
the barrack
you describe
block.
The barrack room? You said it was an old-fashioned sort of barrack. Can you just give us an idea what the room was like, what the facility, you know, the facilities,
yes,
and the
sure.
bed space, what sort of bed and locker space?
Yes, just a very long, wide room with a row of beds down each side of it. Quite well lit, a row of windows along, sort of stone floor, anything rather bleak and rather cold-looking. In fact, I think it was cold. I can't recall much heating there, but this was, after all, November. I think we had simple, I'm not quite sure. I can't remember now whether we had, say, a two-tier bunk, which is very common in various other places. I often slept in a two-tier bunk. Or whether it was just sort of iron truffle beds, which we also came across. And my memory gets a bit confused between different places, I suppose. In the course of the next year or two, I was in quite several locations of that sort. Main impression on arriving was all rather bare and rather grim looking. At the same time, I started chatting. I felt a desperate need to make friends with someone because one was alone, one suddenly dumped into this new environment, totally masculine, of course. And I felt, oh gosh, I'm lonely here. So I set to work to try and to make friends. A little difficult. On the whole, they seem to be rather different types for myself.
What sort of types were they? I mean, I was going to ask, actually, the origins. Mm. Were they of the same sort of background or very mixed background?
Very mixed, I think. Rather mixed. Mainly sort of working class type. Not grammar school boys. I was eventually to discover a grammar school boy here and there. There weren't many of them. So they were all rather different from me. I thought their manners rather coarse. But I hid my disapproval and I tried to behave like the rest of them, to adopt a kind of protective colouring so I wouldn't stand out too much. But I imagine I probably did, because my voice would be a giveaway. But they didn't seem to mind.
Did you find a friend early on?
Yes, indeed. Yes, I found one or two people like myself, a little bit. And I'd rather clutch at straws, a friend, someone to talk to.
So someone who is not perhaps grammar school, but reasonably bright.
Yes, that's right, yes. I found one or two like that.
Was there any bullying?
Well, if not bright, they were friendly. And that was a great thing to find, someone who was friendly and ready to chat.
Was there any bullying immediately apparent? Or no. At all? You know,
I rather feared there might be, but in fact, I didn't really come across it. It wasn't so much bullying, it was just that people more or less ignored you if you were not their sort. In those early days, one didn't really know the ropes or how to make yourself felt, as well. So, I suppose with some lads there, I hardly ever exchanged a word with during the 6 weeks we were there.
Now, if we look at sort of the basic outline of a basic day, we'll pick up a lot of the themes of training during, or basic training during it.
Right.
Now, what time would your morning start, roughly? How are
you? Oh, 6 o'clock, extremely early, for all concerned. And we were woken by a proper reveille from a bugle outside in the yard, and almost immediately followed by NCOs who came whizzing down the room. If you're still in bed, they will rip the clothes off you, your blankets off you, and shout on your feet. And one scrambled out hastily. Then we had a rather short time in which to get dressed. At the end of each barrack room, there was a washroom, a few basins, not enough. Maybe 50 people in the barrack room, and maybe 10 basins. So it was a shove and a scramble to try and get hold of one. Have a hasty wash. The water was cold. There was no hot water.
Did you shave? At the
yes.
Top?
Well, that time I was just really. I wasn't very far down the road of shaving. My whiskers were light. But I was determined to shave every morning. It's just to prove that I had some manly trait. It didn't take me long. So a quick wash and shave. Back to the barrack room, put a batteress on, and almost immediately we would be summoned to the first parade of the day.
That's before breakfast?
This is before breakfast, but for breakfast, as it were. Breakfast parade. So we're lined up in threes and marched a short distance to the eating place, dining hall.
Now, I wanted to ask about generally food generally, you know, pick on breakfast, but then we sort of look at all the food together. What kind of food did you get? And what sort of, you had some sort of, you weren't very keen on meat, but how well prepared was the food, and was there enough of it? This sort of general question, how did you take to the food?
I would say at once, and this was true of me really throughout my army career, I always took to the food as best I could. I mean, I didn't always like it, but I was always hungry. And on the whole, I didn't feel I could complain about the food. It was reasonably good. Breakfast was porridge, and then a bit of fried bacon and fried bread and that kind of thing. Tea was all right. Everybody found the army tea was quite suitable. Came up in buckets, which was a bit startling to see it, and it worked all right. We had a great big mug, of course. We got a mug and a knife, fork and spoon among the first things thrown at us.
What about lunch? What sort of food for lunch?
Lunch was really dinner. So we had meat and vegetables and the pudding. And when I say I didn't really take to the meat, I was quite happy with it. Occasionally it was too tough to eat, but on the whole it was edible. The vegetables weren't bad. And I used to be rather astonished, because we always had a table which would hold 12 people. I think at that particular barracks, the food came up in large containers, sufficient for 12 helpings. So the chap was at the end of the table, had to stand up and dole it out. And so we all got our share. What surprised me was the volume of complaints. Now, one would have supposed, by the way they talked about the food and complained bitterly about what I thought was quite eatable, and which I was really quite enjoying, was as though they'd been brought up to dine at the Ritz or somewhere. Most of them obviously hadn't. They come from rather ordinary homes, and used to wonder what on earth they were accustomed to at home. But they really moaned and groaned about it. And that was fairly common throughout my army career.
And what about tea, then, tea time?
Tea was sort of bread and jam style. Slabs of bread, butter, or margarine, I guess. And jam, and not much else, I think. But again, one was hungry, so one ate it. That was probably the end of the day, except in our time off in the evening, we would go to the nappy.
Because I've left you right. Forward with the thing. Mm. So we were actually at breakfast.
Right.
So
yes.
After breakfast, you go into drainage training.
We start training, that's right, yes.
Can I ask you firstly about drill? Basic foot drill.
Yes.
How did you take to drill? You hadn't been in a
No, I'd not had any cadet experience at all.
What did you think of drill, and how did you take to it?
I didn't like it much. I didn't think it was very nice at all. It was difficult. I didn't take to it at all well, because those days anyway, I was somewhat clumsy, I think, in a sort of bodily way. But I found the marching and keeping a step, not too difficult keeping a step, but not entirely easy. And then the sudden changes of direction, the right turns, the left turns, and the about turns, these I did find tricky. And occasionally I distinguished myself by marching off in the wrong direction. One occasion I was forcibly addressed by the sergeant. Actually, I rather liked. He was a pleasant character. But being the sergeant of that particular job, of course, he was extremely tough towards us, and bellowed, shouted, and on the whole, didn't swear at us. But
I'll come back to your instructors, so I'll deal with them all
sure.
Together.
Right.
Did you understand the purpose at that time, the purpose of drill, or did you find it rather purposeless? I mean, did you know why they were hammering?
Well, it seemed to me sensible procedures for training you to accept discipline, to behave in a disciplined fashion, to fall in with other soldiers around you, march with them, smart yourself up generally, all of which I realised I needed doing to me. So I actually became almost fond of drill. And then later on, very, very rare occasions after that first 6 weeks that we ever did any drill in the signals, I quite enjoyed it.
The next thing,
so I thought it was good.
PT, or physical training. Mm. This was something, I mean, you said yourself you were puny.
Right. Indeed,
you
yes.
But you mentioned that you'd grown 2 inches.
That's right, yes, yes.
And what sort of physical training routine did they put you through?
Just the physical jerks. That was stretching and bending, arms up and down, touching your toes, getting down on your haunches and up again, and lying forward on your hands and pushing us up, press ups. More or less the routine stuff which I'd known at school, of course, and was familiar with. So I didn't mind that much.
What about
except usually it was winter and it was cold. But,
did they put you through route marches or running?
Yes, we worked up to a route march after about 3 weeks training. It was probably about 5 miles the first one, which seemed a long way, but it wasn't too bad. But I quite enjoyed that. That was kind of freedom of the road. You marched along and it was passed the time away quite well.
Now, why did this physical training sort of suddenly make you shoot out? Or would you have shot out anyway, do you think? I mean, why did you suddenly get tougher?
I think it was the severe, well, that's not quite the right word, the sort of heavy physical exercise all the time, whatever you were doing. Not just PT, but everything else. You marched everywhere, you sometimes ran everywhere at the double. Rifle drill was quite arduous, swinging the heavy for me, picking up a heavy rifle and throwing it up and catching it over here, shouldering arms and presenting arms. Practically everything we do seemed to be of physical nature, to which I wasn't really accustomed to be, because I just had occasion to do it. Very much the clerical type in the office. So it was that, combined with copious supplies of food, in fact I was always ready to eat the food, always hungry. So lots of exercise, lots of food. I just got bigger and better, which did me a lot of good.
Now, what about weapons training? How far? I mean, it was only basic training. This.
Yes.
Far did you get with the? I mean, how did they try and teach you to use the Lee Enfield?
We got as far as the rifle and the Bren machine gun. So that was really about all we touched on.
Take the rifle first. How did they attempt to teach you?
First of all, they told us they took us through the names of the parts. Which is a famous joke, I think. So we learned what the various bits were called, and then we were shown how to load and whatever. It all seemed fairly simple. One thing I had great difficulty with was loading to the full capacity of the 10 rounds that the magazine would hold, because it was a strong spring. My small, even today, my hands are still rather small. They certainly were. I found put the clip on top and then try and push it down. You needed the thumb like a navvy to get it crashed straight into the magazine below, against the spring. And that I found always difficult. Used to get into trouble on that one. I remember on one occasion, this rather friendly, rather nice, I thought him, NCO. I think we had an NCO appointed to us as a platoon. That's right, platoon NCO. After one particularly inept display, when we were lined up in threes and I'd done the wrong thing, he came over to me and said, "Bolton," he said, "you may have been a bloody good bank clerk, but you're a so-and-so rotten soldier." I took umbrage at that because I never had been a bank clerk. That wasn't my profession at all. I felt quite insulted. Kept my mouth shut.
How about the actual firing? On the range?
We've taken on the range probably only once, maybe twice at the most. That was fairly interesting. But I found the whole thing a little bit difficult, just the handling of this heavy rifle. It was difficult. Squinting through the sights. And then after you've fired your 5 rounds, which is the most I think we ever fired in one go, the spotter at the far end below the target will show you where your shots had struck home. And they never had hit the bullseye for me.
You weren't a good shot.
I wasn't a good shot.
How about the impact on your shoulder? Did you find
I didn't like that much. And this one was careful. The shoulder got a bit sore. But
what about the Bren? You said rifle and
The Bren was much worse from my point of view. Much heavier. I found it very awkward. So you laid down behind the thing. And then you had to hold it upright in the vertical. That proved rather difficult. This thing was, to my mind, awkward to balance. And it used to roll sideways when I was trying to sight it. So I didn't. I barely hit the target at all. I think there.
Did you do all the stripping down of the Bren? And
oh yes, we did. That's right. Yes, yes. I'd forgotten that. Yes, we stripped the Bren down. and I can remember very little about that now. I do remember later on, when I was with a regular unit, we did have a bit of rifle training there.
I'll come back.
Yeah, I'll come back to that. Yeah.
Now, so you got the bread. Did you do bayonet practice or grenade work or anything like that?
Yes, I'd forgotten that. We certainly did bayonet practice, where we were lined up in front of sacks of straw and a line, and one by one we... from about four files, we all charged forward and endeavoured to stick the bayonet in there. We were exhorted to make fierce noises. So I uttered a fearful cry, probably rather feeble, sticking my bayonet in, and sincerely hoping mentally that I'd never have to use it in real life. So we were taught that much.
Did they spend much time on the bayonet at that time, or was it just a one-off session?
I think it may have done it more than once, but it was a fairly short session. That's all I recall, was just the one sort of line-up.
Did you see the point in it, in the world of automatic weapons?
I can see the point of the bayonet as a sort of last resort, a weapon of last resort in desperate hand-to-hand fighting, which I hoped I wouldn't come across. And the Bren gun, obviously, was a valuable weapon.
Any other hand grenades?
Oh, yes. We were required to throw two live hand grenades. That's right.
That was
after we had a lecture on the subject, shown what to do, and exhorted to hold the grenade firmly and then take out the pin, still holding detonator, detonating lever. Hold it firmly until you've actually thrown it, and put your arm well back and swing it in an arc and fling. Well, now I got, even as a cricketer, I wasn't much good in throwing a cricket ball, and I knew that I wouldn't get my bomb very far, so I was a little worried in case it fell down. I mean, it was known for people just to sort of botch the throw and it would just drop in front of them. So, under close supervision, we had each an NCO to ourselves. We went through the motions and then actually threw it across a sort of sandbagged area. I managed to get mine a few yards away anyway. Of course, then we ducked down and off it went with a bang. And then I threw the second one. And the others did the same. That was a great relief when that was over. I think to everybody, we were all rather scared of the thing blowing up in the wrong place.
What about mortars? Were you introduced to the 2-inch mortar?
No, not at all.
Any other weapons you recall?
We may have had a little bit of instruction sort of verbally on the thing, or perhaps shown pictures, but we never actually saw any other weapons. Nothing else at all I can think of. The Sten gun, I think, at that time was not yet apparent. It came along later.
Now, what about, these training sessions? You'd be doing them through the day. Any other sort of training? Would you do any sort of tactical training at all? You know, sort of how to advance...
Yes, we did a bit of that. We were taken out onto the nearby moors and they gave a little bit of instruction about how to move.
What sort of thing? What were you told? How to move? Tell me.
Basically how to move, that's right. Sort of advancing, covering people who are going in front of you and then moving up to catch up with them, throwing yourself down and when commanded. Excuse me. I remember very little of that. It was a bit of a nuisance. You got muddy and got... your clothes muddy and had to get it off later before you went on parade. In fact, I would make one general remark about the training I received, which really, not just then, but later on too, it was mainly remarkable for the sheer lack of it. I never felt that one got a really thorough training. Now, if I'd been in the infantry, I imagine I probably would have done. Quite different, but in the sort of general training, followed by training in an ordinary unit, non-infantry, as regards the real business of a soldier, using weapons, fighting, taking cover, advancing, all the rest of it, very little of that ever came my way.
Practicing digging in?
Never. And I'll come back to that again when I had to dig in. But we were never trained in that. No doubt infantry were. I suppose they were taught how to dig a proper slit trench and were made to do it. But that's how in the signals, no.
Any other training in this base, you know, that you recall the sessions that you might be doing in the morning or the afternoon?
Did a little bit of very simple signals with a flag, I think. Sort of, I can't remember that. It must have been very simple if we did it at all. Or perhaps it was later on, I may have confused that.
So
I was actually in the signals.
Beyond these sessions, that was a sort of basis of training. And then
one or two films, I think. I think there were one or two films on military aspects.
Really good? Were they helpful?
We enjoy them because one like to sit down and watch a film. Where was that? But yeah, they probably were helpful. A little bit. Not quite sure now. Now, what else did we do? I think they made us do a kind of cross-country run on one occasion, as glorified physical training. She left me totally breathless.
How far would you go?
Oh, not far, a mile or two.
Now, so after the training sessions, you'd have tea, and then your time would be fairly well your own, would it?
As I recall, yes, indeed.
Would you have kit inspections, and would you have to prepare for kit inspections?
Yes.
Because it's quite interesting how you actually, the bull of it all, what do you call of that?
Yes, I recall that the kit inspection was the bane of everybody's life, and certainly mine. And it did happen probably twice, probably once early on and perhaps once later at the end of our 6 weeks training. Of course, the essential of that was that everything had to be set out, every bit of clothing you had and every bit of kit in a proper order. Everything had its place on your blankets, you set it out on your bed space. And it all had to look really good and be clean and tidy and smart. And this was an awful trial. I can't understand why now, because I've had to do that now today. I make a beautiful job of it in 10 minutes, but not then. It was a real arduous chore. And almost certainly you'd be ticked off on something. And you'd be told also, oh, show me that, or open that up. Or you had to open up your hussif, I think we called it, the sewing kit, and had to demonstrate everything that was inside. And of course, it all took place in a very formal atmosphere of the barrack room. Everybody standing by his bed, all called to attention. And then perhaps put at ease while they came round. And then it was a small party. Maybe an officer and an NCO or two NCOs. Possibly a sergeant major. Someone of great eminence as far as we were concerned. And they really did give you a thorough once over. Usually ask you questions. One trembled in one's boots. And somebody occasionally got a real roasting for some terrible mistake or error or failure.
What kind of thing?
I suppose it would be untidy kit or dirty or anything scruffy. Yeah.
So you evaded a real...
I evaded any real taking off, yeah. And of course throughout my time in the army there were kit inspections here and there. I suppose it was laid down somewhere in King's Regs that would be done from time to time. And they were always disliked heartily. I certainly detested them.
Now, what about your NCOs, your instructors? Tell us a bit about what... You mainly had this one you liked. Why did you like him so much? What was good about him?
Well, he had quite a pleasant manner. It was a nice face, friendly looking. And I always felt with him that when he was being stern and strict, he was putting it on a bit. Underneath, it was rather a nice chap. And occasionally, he would have a little friendly chat with us, or do something for us, or make some privilege available to us, and... I always felt he went out of his way to keep an eye on his platoon and help us.
So you think he knew his stuff?
Oh, yes, he did know his stuff very well. I said we occasionally had lectures from other NCOs, some specified aspect.
Were they as good?
Not so good, no.
Not so good?
No. Occasionally we came across an unpleasant one.
What was an unpleasant NCO for you? What made them bad and unpleasant?
Personal remarks, basically. They'd address you and tell you what they thought of you. It tended to be a bit humiliating. Mind you, it was good training again. I mean, it was very good for, no doubt, good for one's character. Well, I don't think it was done deliberately for that purpose. But
what about the officers? Would you see much of them at that stage?
Very little. I think we were put on a grand parade, possibly once a week, and then officers would appear while we marched around and did our stuff. But otherwise, no, I never recall having a word with an officer at all in that 6 weeks training.
So they weren't really part of your life?
No. I don't recall that at all.